This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is almost 6:06 in the evening. Now, before we move on to our next story, we're just going to take a quick look at some of the messages we got for our previous story. The Health Ministry is empowering non-smokers to ask for clean air. Now, our message here comes from Ilanko, which says that a smoker has no right to poison the air I am breathing in. A small dosage of poison is still poison. It's a bit of a tough stance.
That's a strong stance, and as a smoker, I have no argument against that.
Yeah. Our next message it's addressing you, Cam. Please don't get me wrong. We are only speaking on behalf of the voiceless, the babies, very, very old folks, the OKU, asthmatics, pregnant women, those under 18, and so on. The evil is toxic tobacco, secondhand smoke. Able-bodied people should speak up.
Ah, so you're only defending babies, very, very old folks, the disabled, pregnant women. Okay, I'm pro babies and very, very old folks, as are all smokers. So you're absolutely right. And yes.
Right. You can keep those thoughts coming about this story. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also call us at 7733-2900. Now, moving on to our next story, it's from the Malay Mail, and it's about the patronage system in higher education. So the Malay Mail spoke to Dr. Wan Ardatul Amani Wan Salim, or Dr. Amani. She's currently a lecturer in IIUM, but previously she worked with NASA and led a nano-satellite project. So she talked about her experience trying to get funds for her research and essentially found it to be very difficult, and found it to be a struggle. And she's claimed that it's not through merit that federal grants are given, but rather it's about seniority, favoritism, and also your network. And the other problem with this whole issue is that universities here don't focus on scientific and technological research. They prefer to focus on publishing research papers, which boost university rankings. But a large number of these publications carry no value in real life or industrial use. And this is based on QS, a global education consultancy. So let's head straight to the source of the story, where we have on the line Dr. Amani. Thanks so much for joining us. So talk to us in layman terms about what you do and why you decided to return.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, hi.
Yeah, hi. So my expertise is in nanotechnology and sensors development. So what I'm doing is a game-changing technology with nanotechnology to solve environmental problems, biomedical problems, to name a few. Particularly now, I'm working on commercializing these non-invasive sensors for glucose. So instead of clicking your finger, we plan to use other bodily fluids such as saliva so that you can remove the pain of, you know, clicking your fingers several times a day.
That sounds great. And why did you return to Malaysia if you wanted to pursue this?
Yeah, that's a very popular question to me. Huh? So the main thing is I want to contribute to my country. No more than that. I want to contribute to my people, to my country, to create a great future, especially for the young generation, you know. If I were to do anything right now, it's basically not all for me because, you know, you don't live that long to enjoy the fruit of your labors. But most of it I do is because I come back because I want to contribute to my people so that the future generation can have a great future. So that's why I came back.
What were you expecting to find by way of support and resources?
If you come back as a person like me who was in the United States for 18 years, okay, I have gone through a lot of things sort of giving me a comparative mindset in not a bad way, but in terms of, you know, what can we improve in Malaysia, okay? So when I came back, I don't expect people to give me something on a gold platter. Really, I don't. Mm. I'm not here to just complain, but I'm here to improve. So when I came back is that I expect at least, you know, the minimal, okay, is to give a level of autonomy to the young researchers to execute their work. and to establish themselves in Malaysia. And support such as, funding for them to be able to, build their small lab, to hire students, remove the red tapes, remove the bureaucracy, give the support and mentorship and so forth. So really basic stuff, actually. Not a whole, I don't expect people to give me a $1 million grant, but what I most expect is that the funding system for the young and also for the academics has to be structured in a way where it is based purely on merit. Right. And I think that the young generation, never underestimate them. You see, my peers come back from Oxford University, from Cambridge University, from all of these top institutions around the world. When they come back, okay, we treat them like a professional, someone who has gone through that high-level training in their own respective fields, okay? So you come back, you cannot be treating them, like they don't have all these skills and experience, especially, that all of these they're bringing back to Malaysia, right? So in terms of the funding system, at least, the support should be really, really open in terms of, regardless if you're a young assistant professor or whatever stage of your career that you entered academia, is that the funding system must encourage, okay, the same playing field for all of these researchers, regardless young or old. So I'm not just fighting for the young, I'm actually fighting for a system that actually just looks at merit based on great ideas, okay, because great ideas will create great outcomes. That's all.
Right. So those were your expectations or your hopes. But from your personal experience, what have been your encounters with discrimination and this patronage system that has been talked about?
Yeah. So the university is trying a lot to provide help for the young. I understand that. But the key is it really engraved in the system itself. For example, you come home, you don't have connections or anything, right? So, when you write grants, what I encounter is that I started from this fundamental research grant and these grants are open to the young researchers, okay? These grants, they're good, yes, because they encourage to do fundamental research. But then the young researchers should not just be restricted to this type of grants, but all of the other grants that, without having the title of professor or associate professor, should be open also to the young, because great ideas does not depend whether you have a PhD or a professor or what title you have. Great ideas are great ideas, regardless of what it is. So for me, from my experience in the United States, is that they really celebrate great ideas, and that's all they look at, regardless of what titles you are in your position at the university. So I think, here at least, there are some grants that I would like to pursue, but then, you have to put the names of the, you have to put senior faculty so that, because they have a track record and so forth. For me, it's great you have a track record, but the young researchers also have a track record. For example, I'm considered a young researcher in Malaysia, but my track record is I lead a NASA project, right?
Yeah.
But that track record that you have in your previous work or wherever you are, because you were there because you're gaining all the experience before you come back to Malaysia, should be counted also as experience to apply for these larger grants. So for me, if you look at someone, a researcher, just because she or he is not a professor, to have access to these grants and so forth, it actually limits talents, okay? It kills talents, it demoralizes people. People will feel, oh, I have to wait till I have a gray hair, to actually apply these grants, right? That should not be it, okay? Regardless of you, where you are, what your age or what your state or what background you are, you should be able to have access to be able to evaluate it freely, justly on all of the grants that's available.
Dr. Armani, what was an idea that you submitted that subsequently failed to get funding, perhaps from local universities or from a federal grant?
Okay, so I considered myself, based on my peer reviews, I'm quite strong in the grant writing. I understand what needs to be written and so forth. So it's not a matter of, my grant is not good enough or for the grants that are available, right? But based on your from your question, one of the things is not about the rejection of my grant. I mean, I can try again, I mean, if it's got rejected and so forth. Yeah, I have rejection, and that's normal in the grant process. But the thing is, I would like to know clearly why it was rejected, okay? The review process has to tell you clearly and in a comprehensive manner why you rejected, you know, who are you competing against and so forth. You know, is that, it is a small pool of money. So you would like to know, for example, as a young researcher, why your grants are being rejected. I wrote a grant before for with researchers from the United Kingdom. It's a large grant, and I know that, you know, so many people applied, but then the reviews that I received is from the UK side. So from the Malaysia side, I would like to know that why is it rejected, who got funded, you know, things like that has to be visible to researchers like me.
Okay, so yeah. So can I ask then, how do these practices that you've been talking about, how do you think they affect the quality and outcome of the research that Malaysian universities are able to produce?
One of the things is that, you know, there's a saying, right, if you give a certain amount, what amount of money, right, say if you give a small amount of money, you can't expect the researcher to produce the world, okay? You see, in the United States, when I was there, just giving comparison, mm-hmm. I was given $1 million grants to do the SPORSAT project, which is my NASA project, but they don't expect the world, you know. They expect an advancement in the science, even though it is a small leap, but it is an advancement. Now, in terms of the here in Malaysia, you know, if you give a small amount to researchers, to the researchers, you cannot expect people to do magic with the small amount of money that you give. You just have to expect that there is an advancement of the science or the research topic that was done. So for me, it's more of focusing on quality instead of quantity.
Right.
Because if you give like a small amount, say you give 70,000 ringgit Malaysia, you can't expect me to produce, you know, Q1 high-level peer-reviewed publications, because that is not enough to produce that level of work. Maybe it is for some people who do not do experimental work, but you have to put in the context that research differs between different researchers. So the outcome of one researcher to one topic should not be generalized to all, okay? So there needs to be more involvement in understanding that the nature of research itself, the nature of R&D, is not about churning papers or churning in, a prototype with a small amount of money like that. What you can hope for researchers is just for them to do their best with small amount of money and not counting the number of publications. For me, that is better for Malaysia.
Dr. Amani, one last question before we let you mm-hmm. go. You have a lot of optimism for the young researchers here and also for the young graduates here. I wonder if that optimism extends to Malaysian universities. Can Malaysian academies truly rival renowned international institutes like Caltech and MIT?
Okay, I've been in the US system for a long time, okay? And I can give my honest opinion is that if Malaysia were to become the level of, forget MIT or Harvard, let's talk about Purdue University, my alma mater, okay, where Neil Armstrong is from, okay? The first thing people look at, okay, people who come from around the world, international students, they don't look at how many papers, publications you have. What they look at is the basic, such as, is the internet working, okay? Are the libraries functioning? Are the dormitories for the students great? Are the research labs for the researchers and the students to execute work is maintained and kept well? Okay, these are the things. If you want to reach the level of even Purdue University, for example, the basics of these things has to be taken into account first before you even talk about QS ranking. This is my honest personal opinion of the Malaysian universities. Please tackle the basic problem first, you know, the needs of the researchers, the needs of the students, okay? such as the quality of our labs, the quality of our classrooms. Come on, a functioning internet at a university, a functioning, you know, everything, you know, the basis, okay? Good food for the students, for example, healthy food, okay? These are the things that need to be tackled before you can reach to the level of Purdue University and maybe one day MIT or Harvard. This is one. Second is that, okay, that's the basics, right? Second is that, okay, give trust, which is freedom and autonomy, to your researchers and even lecturers, you know, give trust to your students, okay? If we treat, you know, if we treat people like, say, for example, me, I treat my students as professionals because they will become professionals. If I treat them as students, they will remain students forever. So treating people, you know, in the, you know, for them to pursue the best and to be the best, okay, removing the red tapes, give them freedom, okay, reduces the things that hinders them to progress, okay. These are the things that need to be taken care of first before we talk about, hey, Dr. Amani, publish a Q1 level publication in Nature or Science, okay? Don't talk about that yet. Talk about the basics first, solve the basics problem, and you will attract more good talents, you know, to come to our local universities. We don't need to go to Harvard to do high-level research. I'm telling you that we don't lack talents in Malaysian universities. Malaysian universities have a lot of talents. Even, you know, I teach in American classrooms. I can tell you, my students at International Islamic University of Malaysia are very talented. They're in my classrooms, I deal with them. They can do the same level of work as my students in the American universities. However, okay, if they don't have access to the laboratories, to have access to the right things that can push them, okay, push their level of creativity, okay, their hard work and so forth, then forget it. Don't talk about the QS ranking. So for me, handle the basics first. Don't talk the moon and the stars, right? Before we look at the ground and see what we can solve there first.
Dr. Amani, thank you so much for your perspective. Get the fundamentals right first. That was Dr. Wan Ardatul Amani Wan Salim, lecturer at the International Islamic University of Malaysia. Let us know your thoughts. You know, what does it take for Malaysian institutes, Malaysian universities to get to the levels of Caltech, Harvard and MIT? 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.